The views and opinions expressed on Gaza Corner are those of me, Dori Stein, and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of KALW Public Media. The UN General Assembly designated January 27th, the anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz and Birkenau, as the International Holocaust Remembrance Day, that is today, a time to remember the 6 million Jews who perished and millions of other victims, including many Roma Gypsy who perished in the Nazi concentration camps. It's beyond darkly ironic that yesterday the International Court of Justice, I'll refer to it as the ICJ, which is the world's highest court in the international legal system, ruled that the claim of genocide against Israel in its war on Gaza, which was brought to the court by South Africa, is plausible. Quote, real and imminent risk of genocide happening in Gaza. The ICJ accepted the case. This is a big deal. It's only the fourth time in history that the ICJ has accepted a case of genocide. You probably recall the horrendous war in the former Yugoslavia, specifically the extermination of the Bosnian Muslim population, specifically in the town of Srebrenica. That took about 10 years for the ICJ to come to a decision. It ruled that Serbia failed to prevent the 1995 genocide in Srebrenica, but did not rule the country Serbia had committed genocide as a whole. In fact, the ICJ has never ruled an entire country has committed genocide. So Israel conceivably would be the first case if they rule that way, but it will take years and years for a decision to occur. The Genocide Convention was born out of the ashes of the Holocaust. It was 1948 that it was in effect for the first time. Other ongoing genocide cases taken on by the ICJ, and again, these are ongoing, are Myanmar's alleged genocide against the Rohingya minority, and just in 2022, it began deliberations on the issue of Russian genocide rhetoric and intentions toward Ukraine following its invasion that February. The ICJ did order an immediate suspension of Russia's military activities against Ukraine about a month into the war. The lesson there is that the rulings of the ICJ may be binding, they are, but they are not enforceable unless the countries of the world make it so. That has not been the case in Russia and Ukraine. Russia has a seat on the Security Council, can veto anything it wants, just like the United States. South Africa, Palestine, human rights scholars and activists all cheered the ICJ decision, which is really a historic decision, ruling quote-unquote plausible genocide being committed by Israel. What South Africa and the Palestinians really wanted, though, was for an emergency measure known as a provisional order for an immediate ceasefire, and that did not happen. And Israel and the United States is spinning the ruling as an endorsement of Israel's right to continue the war, in quote-unquote self-defense, which is mind-blowing, but that's what they say, to remove Hamas and execute its right, as I say, to self-defense. Keep in mind, Israel was one of the 41 original signatories to the Genocide Convention, coming as it did shortly after the Holocaust. The fact that the ICJ ruled that it is, quote-unquote, at least plausible that Israel could be violating Palestinians' rights to be protected from genocide and that there is a, quote-unquote, real and imminent risk that such violations could plausibly occur as the case continues to be adjudicated, and it will take years and years. So therefore, the ICJ has ordered Israel to execute 6 provisional measures proposed by South Africa to, in the meanwhile, protect Gazans from genocide. It's important to note that these 6 emergency measures were passed overwhelmingly by the 17-judge panel, but two of the provisional requests by South Africa were not accepted, the main one being, and the most important one being, the immediate ceasefire. And I looked through the 27-page ruling of the ICJ. It's pretty easy when you have it in a computer. You just put the keyword in, ceasefire. 27 pages. Never mentioned. Not once. So they chose to avoid it, the ICJ. I read that perhaps one reason the ICJ did not weigh in was because Hamas is not a state actor and therefore not a signatory, of course, to the Genocide Convention. But Hamas has been saying for weeks that it will only agree for an all-for-all hostage-prisoner exchange if there is a permanent ceasefire. Mahmoud Mamdani is a professor of government at Columbia University. He specializes in the study of colonialism. He was a guest on yet another excellent Democracy Now!, which is always available at democracynow.org and also airs on KPFA at 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. San Francisco time. So on the day of the ruling, which was yesterday, on January 26th, this was Mahmoud's take on an immediate ceasefire not being authorized by the court.
I wasn't sure they would call for a ceasefire, but now listening to the reasoning of the court, it is clear to me that they couldn't have called directly for a ceasefire without preempting their future deliberations. At the same time, if it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, and sounds like a duck, then it's a duck. Everything they ordered in terms of preventive measures leads to only one conclusion, which is ceasefire. How do you stop killing people? Ceasefire. How do you ensure that supplies for human life get in? Ceasefire.
Again, the words are right there of Mahmoud Mamdani on Democracy Now! Yesterday. The 6 provisions of the ICJ were as follows, and I'll quote them verbatim. Number 1, take all measures within its power to prevent the acts within the scope of the Genocide Convention, killing members of the group, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part, and imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group. Number 2, ensure that the Israeli military does not commit genocidal acts described above. Number 3, prevent and punish the direct and public incitement to commit genocide in relation to members of the Palestinian group in the Gaza Strip. Number 4, enable the provision of urgently needed basic services and humanitarian assistance to address the adverse conditions of life faced by Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Number 5, take effective measures to prevent the destruction and ensure the preservation of evidence related to allegations of acts within the scope of relevant articles in the Genocide Convention. And lastly, submit report to the ICJ within 1 month on all measures taken. And that will be actually February 19th. South Africa's Minister for International Relations is Naledi Pandor. And outside the court, he said that Israel cannot effectively implement these measures without having a ceasefire in effect. Quote, how do you provide aid and water without a ceasefire? If you read the order, by implication, a ceasefire must happen. But obviously, that's not Israel's interpretation. In fact, Prime Minister Netanyahu ordered his government ministers who have gotten a lot of the reason that South Africa felt emboldened to bring this case to the ICJ was that so many people in the Israeli government have said publicly, basically, that there is intention to commit genocide in various ways. So Netanyahu, the first thing he did after this ruling was to tell all the government ministers to not comment because they tend to implicate themselves. Of course, Netanyahu, along with Israel's president and Israel's defense minister, have also been guilty of genocidal intent verbosity. And the ICJ in the 27-page document wrote up many of those comments. But despite Netanyahu urging his ministers to put a lip on it, ultra-Jewish supremacist far-right national security minister Itamar Ben-Gvir had to say something. And he did it on X. And it must be his most articulate tweet, quote-unquote, Hague Schmeig. That's it. Haig Schmeig. Beautiful, Ben-Gvir. Netanyahu asserted that the court, quote, rightfully rejected the outrageous demand for an immediate halt to the military attacks on Gaza. The very claim that Israel is carrying out genocide against Palestinians is not only false, it's outrageous. And the willingness of the court to deliberate at all is a mark of disgrace that will not be erased for generations, the words of Benjamin Netanyahu. War cabinet member Benny Gantz apparently didn't notice the dark irony of dusting off never again, quote unquote, never again to sanctify Israel. Quote, when Israel was founded, we swore never again. Now we are keeping our promise and fulfilling our national and historical duty according to international law, Jewish heritage, and IDF morals. We will keep honoring this historic duty and standing by moral and legal principles together. He really said that. Again, the words of War Cabinet member Benny Gantz. The U.S. State Department, not to be outdone, said that the ICJ ruling is, quote, consistent with our view that Israel has the right to take action to ensure the terrorist attacks of October 7th cannot be repeated in accordance with international law, and we continue to believe that allegations of genocide are unfounded. We note that the ICJ did not make a finding about genocide or call for a ceasefire in its ruling, and that it called for the unconditional immediate release of all hostages being held by Hamas. No one expected a ruling on the genocide. Everyone knows that's going to take years and years. The immediate ceasefire is a disappointment for people that wanted to see the fighting stop. It's really quite a spin job, though, because as I mentioned earlier, it's only the fourth genocide case that the ICJ has taken on. And if you look through the report, it's linked at the Gaza Corner section of the playlist. It's a 27-page PDF. If you look through it, genocidal ingredients are detailed throughout. So it could very well be that they do rule for the very first time that a country is committing genocide. But if it's years from now, the key will be if these provisional measures have any effect, because Gaza may not exist and Gazans may not be there by the time the ruling actually takes place. Jordan's King Abdullah II, I think he nailed the hypocrisy of the US position really well. And he was drawing a comparison with Russia's invasion of Ukraine. He said that the US condemned attacking civilian infrastructure and deliberately starving an entire population of food, water, electricity, and basic necessities. International law loses all value if it's implemented selectively. Because if I read that quote to you, attacking civilian infrastructure and deliberately starving an entire population of food, water, electricity, and basic necessities, you would bet everything that I'm talking about Gaza. But no, this was the US describing Russia's attacking of everything in the civilian infrastructure of Ukraine and also deliberately using starvation as a weapon of war. The Human Rights Watch has already said that Israel is using starvation as a weapon of war. The US selectively applies international law. And that's really the story in a nutshell. One item that the mainstream media, I think, never covered, I didn't see it, is something that the news portal Mondo Weiss brought up. In mid-November, probably unaware of the South African claim that was going to be submitted to the ICJ, Canada, Denmark, France, Germany, the Netherlands, and the UK filed a joint submission to the court regarding the genocide case, the Gambia versus Miramar, which is now before the ICJ. These countries recommended that the court broaden the quote-unquote construction of the Genocide Convention, taking into account the quote serious bodily or mental harm armed conflict verging on genocide inflicts on children and the role of forced displacement in gathering genocides. More children have been killed in this period of time than in any conflict in modern history, as far as I know. North of 10,000 at this point in 3.5 months. And the forced displacement is obvious for everyone to see. So these countries may have inadvertently strengthened the case for the ICJ to eventually rule in favor of South Africa. Holocaust and genocide scholar Roz Siegel proclaimed yesterday on Democracy Now! The ICJ ruling is, quote, an unprecedented ruling. It signals first and foremost the end of Israeli impunity in the international legal system. This is the end of that era. Not so fast, Roz. Not so fast. Israel has to report to the ICJ a progress report, how it's implementing the six provisional measures I read earlier. That is due on February 19th. If the ICJ decides Israel is not complying, the only recourse for enforcement is through the UN, the Security Council, for the Security Council to pass a resolution. None of the Security Council members can veto it. Otherwise, it can't pass. But the UN system, we've seen it's paralyzed. It's already had two votes for a ceasefire, and the US has been the only country to veto it, but that's why it didn't happen. and it can do so again in that scenario. Time and time again, the U.S. protects Israel through the United Nations. And after the ruling, yesterday's ruling by the ICJ, the U.S. State Department interpreted the lack of a ceasefire directive as a green light for Israel to continue its assault on Gaza. So, you know, chances are it's just going to veto again if it gets to that point. Most of the rest of the world had a different conclusion due to the plausible genocide wording, but it appears likely the ICJ, the highest court in the world, may become further proof that the international legal system is really determined by hegemonic powers, such as the United States, which picks and chooses when it suits to apply international law. There was a piece, it's linked at the Gaza Corner section of the playlist. It says, why the international community made it so difficult to prosecute the crime of genocide. It's written by A. Period Dirk Moses. Quote, the states that thrashed out the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide of the UN in 1947 and 48 designed it so that the state's sovereignty would not be compromised in waging international and non-international armed conflict. Today, international law on genocide is working as it was designed to, allowing states to ruthlessly exterminate security threats while making it difficult to apply that law. By the reasoning of international lawyers supporting Israel's war in Gaza today, there are no limits to the number of Palestinian civilians who can be killed incidentally in the pursuit of Israeli military objectives, the words of A. Dirk Moses. As I mentioned, these provisions that the ICJ put forth are binding but not enforceable. So this really is the moment of reckoning for whether the international legal system is broken or perhaps able to end Israel's lifetime of exceptionalism and impunity. You can get on a Gaza Corner newsletter by emailing tangentsradio@gmail.com. If you go to the Gaza Corner archive at tangents.com, last week's hour-long interview with Gershon Baskin is up. Gershon is someone who was unique, amazing to have him on Gaza Corner, unique because for 17 years he was the non-governmental Israeli to have direct access, a direct channel into Hamas. And I think the interview is quite informative, quite compelling. So you can catch it at the Gaza Corner archive.